Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book. I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. This one is a bit late because Juliana and I went on a trip to Iceland. Juliana joins me for this podcast. How was the trip to Iceland?
Amazing.
You can check out my Twitter feed or Instagram or my blog and stuff, or Facebook and things like that. We've been posting video updates and photos there as well, so you can check out that thing. So this book that we're going to be talking about today, reviewing, I just finished a few days ago, but Juliana started it as an audiobook a while ago, didn't you?
Yes. I don't even know when I started it.
It was a long time ago, and you started it and you're like, oh yeah, this is okay, it's okay, but you listen to it as an audiobook, and also the way that this always happens, that we've had to learn how it happens, is that you say, okay, Juliana, you start the book, and when you're like a chapter from the end, I'll start the book, and then I finish the book, we finish the book about the same time. As this time I was just like, I'll let you finish the book, and then I'll start it. So you finished the
exactly.
book, and you said to me...
I said to you, it's an episode thing.
Yeah,
it's
episodic.
Episodic book, and... I didn't understand the last episode, and I didn't really, at some point, it just lost me.
Are you talking about the last episode or the coda at the end? There's sort of like a section after, which is set some time after,
I'm
like the next generation.
Both.
Okay. Well then, let's talk about it.
Okay.
Oh yeah, and that's the thing. I said to Juliana, I said, well, I'll read it and I'll see if I can work it out and then I'll explain it
yes.
to you. So that's what this podcast is going to be.
Yeah.
Me explaining Pervain by Keith Roberts. Is it Keith Roberts?
Let's yeah, have a quick Keith look. Roberts.
Yeah, Keith Roberts. I've got the Wikipedia page over here. It says, Pervain is an alternative history science fiction fix-up novel by British writer Keith Roberts. A fix-up novel means it was sections of it were published as short stories or novellas first, and then it was put together in a series of short stories set in the same
right.
world, telling an overarching story. This is very common in the 1960s, and this was actually published in 1968. I have seen this book mentioned. I've seen it kind of mentioned in these, oh, this is alternative history, because it's kind of very early alternative history.
Yeah.
And I've also seen it mentioned in various places, you know, generally considered to be a great book. It's one of the Golant's masterworks. I've seen it there. So did I bring up a... No, I didn't... look it up, but it's there, but it is one of those ones that's listed alongside, I think there's like 70 or 80 different other books there from like 1950s on. Well, actually some really early stuff. I think some H.G. Wells are in the Golant's Masterworks.
Oh, okay.
But I've always seen this there and went, oh, that looks kind of interesting, I guess. But never really got into it until you read it and you,
Yeah, because somebody on Goodreads recommended this book.
To you?
I think to me or in general. Just
yeah.
It was just coming up. And I thought, oh, that sounds good. But I didn't get into it. I just didn't. But what I really noticed was that episodic, like, okay, this sounds like separate stories.
They were
together.
Published as separate stories.
Of course, that makes more sense now.
Yeah.
And also the problem is maybe because I listened to it as an audiobook.
Yeah.
And I only listen to audiobooks when I'm driving in the car. So when I'm not driving, I'm not listening.
Yeah.
And when I'm driving, it's mostly in 30-minute chunks.
Yeah, like over to your parents' place
exactly.
or driving to work or
yeah,
something.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So it really is getting ripped out into bits a bit. And that
yeah.
might be one of the reasons why I didn't quite follow so well until the end.
Well, let's get into it. First of all, the comments that you were telling me when I was about to start reading it, you were like, well, I don't understand. Did it all happen at the same time? Was everything happening at the same time? And
yeah.
I didn't understand that because I thought you meant was everything happening concurrently? Were all these stories happening like... this person's life was being lived at the same person as this person's life was being lived and this, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
But then you kind of clarified that and you're saying, was it all taking place in the same timeline? Like,
yes,
is it
exactly.
all in the same world? Which is actually more instructive to you than like when I read that, I was like, oh, well, of course it is. It's alternative history. And then I explained to you what alternative history was sort of like something has changed in the past. And
yeah.
then we run forward a generation, or we run forward a few decades, you know, like Man in the High Castle.
Yeah.
Germany wins the Second World War. Germany and Japan win
Japan,
the Yeah. And Italy win the Second World War. The Axis powers win the Second World War. Fast forward 20 years to
yeah.
1960s. And what is the world like then?
Okay. Of course. Yes.
In that book, there is a similarity. So I'm guessing The Man in the High Castle and this book, both written in the 1960s. Oh, I should check this out, actually, to see when High Castle when that was published, because there are some very clear similarities between those two books. Oh yeah, 1963 and 1968. So Pemi Pavan was influenced by this, at least in the conclusion of those last few sections there. So it says very, very clearly in the introduction, it says Elizabeth I was assassinated. She was shot.
Yes.
And then that's how it opens. She was shot. The Spanish Armada arrived, succeeded. Britain became a Catholic country again.
Yes.
And which it did for a while. That was the thing, you know. Like, it was one of those times when it was at the time of the Protestant Revolution. Oh,
and
Catholic
switched
again.
Around,
switching backwards and forwards and stuff like that. And this is actually played out. So if you imagine and also going through to the Civil War after Charles I and stuff like that in the real world, in our timeline, there's some elements of all that period being reflected into it, including the Corfe Castle, the Corfe Gate thing actually did happen, or there was a siege at Corfe Castle.
Okay.
Which the siege didn't succeed, but then a lot of castles at that time, the Parliament said, oh, okay, we can't have all these strongholds around here, and they voted to tear lots of these castles down.
Okay.
So a lot of the ruined castles in the UK aren't because they were blown down by castles. It was, you know, down by cannons. It was that they were, you know, destroyed.
Yeah.
So they couldn't be strongholds against the Parliament.
Well,
anymore.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway, so there is elements in these books which comes from the real, you know, the real world, and also from this alternate history. So what happens is that then because the Britain or England then becomes a defender of the Catholic Church and puts down the Protestants in Germany and stuff like that. All these different, you know, 30 year wars beforehand.
Yeah.
Anyway, all of these wars where Protestants came out on top, they didn't.
Of course.
And then you fast forward to the future, or to the 1960s. So this book,
the future of that.
Yes, to it's like 1968 when this book is set. Or it actually says at one point, oh, it's the 20th century. It's the age of reason. But the Catholic Church is still in control. The Catholic Church controls all of the the New World, America. I saw a good one that James Cook planted the papal flag in Australia. So instead of Australia being claimed for the British Empire, it's claimed for the Catholic Church and things like that.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So there's these little references throughout the book to show what's different.
All over the world.
All over the world. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not just different. It's not just different in England. It's sort of like different everywhere. So so that's the setup. And and one of the main things that the Catholic Church has done is held back technological progress.
Yes.
In a way, they haven't held back scientific progress, because at some point you're reading and it's all about it's very steampunk. Like if this was around now, it would be steampunk with the signaling and the steam trains, or not the steam trains, the steam trucks, which are, you know,
flying things. I don't know. Were there flying steam things?
Nothing flies in this book. No.
Okay.
So the whole point is that technology has been restricted, but science hasn't. So they're saying, like, oh, but we know about electricity, and we got these generators. And they're like, oh, no, you can't use those generators because electricity is bad.
Okay.
So that's one of the main things. So the first book that's like this is a book in six parts plus a coda in a pavane.
Let me just say something.
What?
At the beginning, you said, oh, it is told that the Queen Elizabeth was assassinated and stuff.
Yeah.
For some reasons, I didn't have this in my head for being our history being rewritten. I had in my head, okay, in a world, a Queen Elizabeth was assassinated.
Yeah, but our...
Queen Elizabeth the First. Of course, but I didn't put together that this was actually our history just rewritten.
So
I thought in a world, a Queen Elizabeth was assassinated. And I totally saw the parallels to like the what was the church doing this? I ask you about it before.
The Inquisition.
I thought, this is like the Inquisition.
No, it is the Inquisition.
I know, but I didn't get it.
It's not like the Inquisition.
It is the Inquisition. Yeah,
I think if I'd have told you going into this book, this is alternative history.
Yes.
Explained what alternative history, I'd have been like, oh yeah, it's like the Man in the High Castle.
Right.
If I'd have just said that, I think you'd have probably get a better understanding of what was going in this book and a better appreciation straight away.
Yes.
So maybe you just need to read this book again.
I think so too. I really noticed that just as us beginning talking about it, I just need to read it first of all, I think I need to read it, not listen to it.
Yeah.
And I will definitely give it a second shot because...
All right.
Yeah.
So let me go to the Wikipedia page because I think it actually says... Oh, yeah. So it has the titles of these, like, there's like six main stories.
Right.
Plus the coda. So yeah. I'm just going to go through some of these quickly we'll just get, like, if what you got from it.
Okay.
So yeah. The Lady Margaret, there's a lonely steam haulier meets a friend from his past. And that is, was it Jesse Strange, who was one of the key figures in this book?
Yes.
I don't want to spoil it, but he's a kind of a clever guy, but he's not very good with relationships. But actually, he's better at relationships. It turns out he's better at relationships and human interaction than we thought he was going to be at the start.
Yeah.
So did you enjoy that story?
That was the story I got in quite, like, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And
it's a very easy start to a book like this.
Yes, that's what
it
is.
In fact, I think it's a deceptively easy start to a book like this.
Yeah, and then from that point on, I thought, oh... And, like, I think the third or fourth story...
Well, let's get into them later.
...already just, got a bit like, huh, what's going on?
No, even the second story you seem to... Anyway, but this one, it's about a guy who is going on... He's decides to take a trip across to another village with an inn because he wants to talk to his... He wants to propose marriage to... Because his father died.
Yes.
And he's like... Oh, no, it was his father or his uncle? No, yeah, it's his father.
His father, and he took over the family business thing.
Yeah, and it kind of explains a bit about his story. And then he's like, well, my father died, and it's one of those things where I'm looking at my life, I'm facing my own mortality, I've just got to ask her to marry me. She's going to marry me, and guess what?
She does.
No, she doesn't. She doesn't marry him.
She doesn't?
And then other adventures happen. I think it's good. But you were saying to me, but it's not even science fiction. This is pure science fiction. But it's pure, like, steampunky science fiction that it's all about this truck. And he explains, oh, and this is where the steam comes from. We do it there. And this is how you get over a hill. And this is how you slow the steam train down. And this is where the different carriages. And it's not a train. It's a truck. So it drives on roads. And he's having to steer it. But the roads have been built in straight lines everywhere.
Oh, okay.
And it's so he's driving these, these trucks up and down these roads over these things. But he's got to get water. And it's really technical. It's like someone...
It's very much someone
nerding out... about steam truck technology, which doesn't exist in our world, but you understand it. And even saying, oh, but there's petrol, we can use combustion engines. And they're like, oh, no, but the church doesn't like combustion engines and things, you know.
Okay.
So all of that is there. Like I say, it's technological progress which has been held back rather than scientific progress, which I think is an interesting way when you're looking at the Catholic Church and stuff like that. So that's the first one. The second one is The Signalman. What's it called?
What I have mostly in my head about this first story is that he has an accident.
No, he doesn't have an accident. What accident? We're getting to spoiler territory straight away. But okay, what's the accident?
But he does an accident, and he can't control the thing anymore. And then he's across the snow. Did we listen to different audiobooks?
What are you talking about? He got into a snow. He can't control it anymore. A guy in a train. What are you even talking about?
He had this accident, and he was going in the snow, crawled across, and then...
No, that's the next book. That's The Signaler. No, it is.
Oh.
That's the guy at The Signaler. We're just getting onto that story. The end of there's
no, but that was the amazing thing about me was that the first story ended with him with the steam
the haulier
guy him he had this accident and
no,
then he was
he wasn't there was no accident
what yeah, the how, hell
what are you even talking about he meets an old rival, an old friend from school, and the guy works out that the guy is probably going to try and he's working for the pirates, like the land pirates.
Yeah. And then these guys chase him.
Yeah, they chase him.
Yeah.
Wait a second, we're just explaining this. Okay, so they chase him, and he's like, he tells the guy, oh, all the valuable stuff is in the last carriage.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh. So when he jumps off the train, and his friends come in, and they attack the last carriage, and he undoes the last carriage, and they all chase after the last carriage.
Yes.
But it's full of explosives, and it blows up and kills them all.
Yes.
That's the end of the story. And he's like, and that's the reveal, is that the big reveal there is that, oh, we thought he was an idiot, and we thought this other guy was getting a one over on him, but it turns out, actually, this guy is really clever.
Okay.
And he's set up, and he was like, I'm willing to kill my childhood friend, even though he, because he's now a land pirate,
okay,
he's a highwayman, And that's the end of the story.
And I thought the end of the story is that after they
it
exploded, that he crawls out and then...
No, there is, that's a totally different story. Like, I can't believe that you've mixed up these two stories. The next story, number two, is the signaler.
Yeah.
And that ends with, that's about a guy who, there's the two key technologies in this book are the signals, is the steam trains and the signals. And
I the signal things were quite cool.
Yeah. Semaphores. Yeah, semaphores, like, but these massive robot semaphores, which are controlled by humans and they send messages upwards and up and down
the
things.
They do clicky noises and stuff.
Yeah. So it's like, imagine if you were had to have like signalers, you know, with the telegrams, with a Morse code telegram. Yeah. But you weren't allowed to use electricity. Yeah. You had to use line of sight. Anyway, so this guy, yes, at the end of the story, it does turn a bit weird. It's the signaler who has an accident. He goes out and is attacked by a snow cat or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then then weird stuff happens there.
Exactly.
But that's a different character, a different story. Okay. And it's disconnected from the story completely.
I will read it again and see what.
But what? How could you think that was happening to the same person? It was two different people.
No, it wasn't the same person. But it ended like one person. He got himself against a tree, and then it was cold.
Yeah.
And then there were like, and then he obviously died.
No. Yes.
That wasn't my opinion.
No, but that's the okay. So it starts in the second story. Starts in media res. It starts off like, oh, there's another story later. The Lords and Ladies starts off like that as well. It says this is what's happening here in this story, and it's like, now let's go back to the beginning of this person's life or to when he was a child and let's do the same and let's lead up until that point.
Yeah, so it all, like the main events, like even though they do have going backs in time and telling about history, the main events happen all in the same timeline.
Well, the signal, yes, they're all in the same timeline, but the signaler is something, it's a side story, so it doesn't matter if it happened before the first story or after the first story, but it does mention he gets a lift on one of the steam trains, and in the steam train, it's sort of like he looked up and saw the signaler, so it's kind of informing technologies in this world.
And the stories overlap in other ways as well, because the next story looks back on the second story.
Yeah.
I remember that one.
Okay. So the signaler tells the story of a guy who works in a signaler. And at the end of this, you're like, but the fairies aren't real. And I'm like, no, even we were texting backwards and forwards actually as I was reading this. And I was like, yeah, well, you say it's all like not really anything. And the fairies, and I was like, wait, they keep mentioning fairies. So I'm sure fairies are going to, in the first story, they mention fairies. But they're like, oh yeah, someone on this moor, people think fairies live there. In the second book, I even text message you, I reckon there's going to be fairies by the end of this story because they keep mentioning them.
Yeah. And then like... No, what are you talking about? Fairies.
But
he was in a signaling house all by himself. And then it got cold and stuff. And then he went out and got attacked by the cat.
Yeah, and then he comes back in.
And then he comes
back
in. And then he's obviously really ill. Yeah. And he has hallucinations.
No, they're not. Yes, they are hallucinations. But exactly. But he's having a... Okay, so here is another thing.
And then he dreams about, oh yeah, there's this person coming and they're coming to me and she's doing stuff to me. And then he dies.
Yeah.
So all the stuff before... wasn't real. It didn't happen.
No, it was real. It did happen on a spiritual realm. And you know this because when they come in, the other signalers come in to investigate and they're like, oh, all the fairy signals, symbols around here. There's this, you know, this one with the arrows pointing in different directions and stuff like that. Arrows pointing this way and arrows pointing that way. It's like, it looks like a crab. They say it's like a signal, like a little crab shape with arrows pointing both ways. That's a symbol of that the fairies use to show that they're messing with our world. That when there's an overlap between the fairy land and the land in this book, there's this different overlap.
Hmm.
So there's a whole section where it talks about, and the fairy comes in and tells him the story of her Jesus, of Balder. You know, we're just in Iceland and we said Baldur's Gata and there's here and Balder there. That's sort of like a mythical figure.
Maybe I just
And even later in the book, they even said, oh, Balder is like Jesus, but older than Jesus.
Hmm.
And it's very clear that Balder dies on a tree by hanging on a tree, and then he is a figure of redemption, and that's Balder is the fairy's Jesus.
All right.
And it's very clear that when this guy is near to death, the fairy comes in and saves his soul, and he goes to fairy heaven rather than Jesus heaven, rather than her heaven.
Okay.
It's saying, it's very clearly saying that, okay, the Catholic Church... If we consider that miracles do happen on the Catholic Church is powerful and that kind of stuff, and fairies exist, they have their own religion. They have their own Jesus.
Okay.
And it's like a parallel. It's kind of saying, okay, like if the Abrahamic religions come up from the Middle East area and that's where they are true, that's where they are real.
Yeah.
Does the British Isles have its own history with its own savior god and its own mythical beings, its own angels and stuff like that.
Okay. But I think this is then so much more book for you.
Why
it's
for me?
So it's so perfect for you. It's about history. It's about alternative history, and it's about science and like stuff. And it is also then about religion. This is a perfect
book.
But
also
for you.
It's about the British.
It's also about all of that.
It's also about Albion. It's about if you've read other books which include, you know, fairies and British Isles and Albion and, you know, the King Arthur legends and all of those kind of things. Well, that's what this book is. I do say it isn't very clear, even if people did it, it is quite an opaque book, but that's what I enjoyed so much about it. I'm reading stuff and I'm like, wow, there is so much going on which isn't being explained here, but it's good. Anyway, we'll get onto that more.
Onto
more than that. So that is the setting out our storyline. The next one is called The White Boat. And it's she's a fisher girl who learns how to swim, and then she
escapes to the boat.
She goes onto a boat.
Yeah,
it's a little pirate interlude.
Yeah,
which, to be honest, I didn't really add that much, but it did show that there are some connections between, you know, between the UK. Well, it isn't even the UK. It's sort of like Dorset, in the southeast of England, and there are people going backwards and forwards to France, and it's kind of like, oh, so even the what we've seen in these previous stories, there is actually other people kind of going against what the wishes of the church and stuff like that. Okay, what did you think about that story? It was okay.
I was never really sure what it added to the whole story. The meaning, or what's the purpose of the story in the whole story?
I think it shows a bit more about diverting paths. There's a lot of kind of quantum uncertainty in this book, where like if one thing happens, the universe goes on one path, and if something else happens, it goes on another path. You know, it's the alternative history.
Yeah.
And that's kind of one of those things where it shows that of like, oh, this action would lead to that, and she makes this decision and it leads to that, you know. That kind of thing. It's just a little thematic exploration with an adventure story.
One question, does she come back?
Again, that's the thing. Maybe in one world she will come back and she will do this. Maybe another world she dies. But again, it's left ambiguous what's happening at the end of some of these stories.
Because I thought at some point is later in the story, she meets the other guy from the next episode.
Yeah.
And I thought that was the girl there.
Yeah.
From maybe. The boat.
So the next episode is what?
About Brother John?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So who is the person whose boat gets stolen at the end of Brother John's?
I thought that was boat.
Was her fisher boat.
Yes.
It's not the white yacht, but it is maybe her fish, because she's got a little fishing boat down in that village.
Exactly.
So, again, it's just setting up these different things that play into these different stories that play into each other.
Okay.
And anyway. It's just showing there's going to be a boat in the next one, so they set this up. So Brother John is, I think, this, again, it starts off and you go, oh, who's this Brother John? And then it goes back, and then, it goes kind of backwards and forwards and kind of
that
shows
that was kind of confusing sometimes.
Yeah.
But, and also, I always mixed up the Brother Sebastian. Was that the other guy? There was another guy. Or was Brother John the painter? Was that the painter?
Yeah, Brother John was a painter.
It was the painter.
So he starts off and he's very good at painting, but he becomes a monk, and then they like, oh, well, you're kind of good at this, and then he starts designing labels. He's like a logo designer and label designer, and he's very good at that.
Yeah.
And then he is brought in to be the court reporter. Not the court reporter, but you know, like in the court.
People who draw the chalk scenes, because you can't record something mid-video.
Yeah.
Or
so photography isn't allowed. So he is sent in to record the Inquisition, and it gets pretty grim. Like, it's all been like,
yeah,
la, 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 la,
yeah,
la.
Very
Isn't
much.
It fine? We live in rural England, very pastoral, la, 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 la. Oh, the Inquisition. Oh, shit, the Catholic Church and the Inquisition still exist. And you're like, oh, okay. You're like, oh, yeah, because it's all the Spanish people who took over the rest of Europe, you know, so it's kind of like the Spanish Inquisition-style Catholic Church. Which is taking over like Northern Europe in that way. So there's that going on.
Yeah, what they explained there was really grim.
Yeah,
really
grim.
Horrible.
Really grim.
Like torture scenes, and he had to draw them, and then had a trauma.
Yeah, well, I was traumatized. I was like, this was all fun up until this point. This isn't fun anymore. And then you can kind of understand he becomes a, like, the voice in the wilderness. He becomes like the John the Baptist
like the savior
kind of guy.
Kind of. Yeah, maybe not the savior, but like.
But it's so great because it brings in so much. It's like, oh, he's the guy. He does the Sermon on the Mount. He gets into the boat, and you're like, oh, and then there's going to be. Because it's so many parallels to Jesus. It's like kind of rewrite. It's like retelling the Jesus story again, which is the Jesus story was retelling Elijah and Moses and all of these other character stories. So it's this same kind of basin cyclical. Not cyclical history, but cyclical storytelling, or like replaying out stories with different messages. We're like they have so many things in common. So you're like, okay, we're all playing in the same playground now, but the differences are the important things. You know, it's one of those things where you can't. Oh well, it's not retelling that because he doesn't die on a cross and come back to life and do all that. It's like, yeah, but that's the point of stories, is that you set up the expectations in the people's brains, and then you play out the endings in different ways, or you have different conclusions, and it's the different conclusions which are the most important things. For example, there's just biblical studies things as well, but from real life. Okay, there's two different stories of wise kings, different kings solving problems by cutting things in half with a sword. Alexander the Great comes. Do you know the Gordian knot? There's a knot which was so bad and nobody could ever do it.
Yeah,
and he's like, oh. I will. I'll solve this problem. I'll get this rope separated from that rope. But he didn't untie the knot. He just sliced it in half, which shows that Alexander the Great was a war kind of guy. He's like, well, I'm taking no bullshit. If there's a problem, we can solve it with a sword.
Yeah.
Similar story with Solomon, a very wise king. He wasn't the warrior king like his father David or Alexander the Great and things like that. He was very wise. They're like, oh, we have this baby. And this woman says it's her baby, and this woman says it's her baby. What should we do? And he's like, let's cut the baby in half. Do you not know this story?
No.
He says, let's cut the baby in half. And it doesn't even make sense as a story.
No.
Because, of course, they don't cut it in half, because one of the women says, oh, no, don't cut the baby in half. Let the other woman have it. And they're like, well, that's obviously the mother of the child, because the other woman doesn't love the child.
The mother would always want the best for the child.
Even if it means her losing the child. Yes. Which is so...
Okay.
But of course, the other woman would also play that she wouldn't be... She wouldn't be like, yes, let's cut the baby in half and I'll take one half. Because it obviously doesn't make sense as a real story.
Yeah.
In the same way that the Gordian knot doesn't make sense as a real story. I mean, it's sort of like a fable told about these characters.
Yeah.
And
it's more about the meaning behind it.
Yeah, it's about the meaning behind it.
Yeah.
But they're both stories of kings solving a quandary by cutting something in half with a sword.
Yeah.
So one
or not.
Or not. Yeah, but that's the whole point, is that you think these are two totally different stories, but they're obviously connected together.
Mm.
And nobody hearing the story of Solomon, who also knew the story of Alexander the Great and the Gordian knot, nobody in 200 BC would hear that story of Solomon and not immediately connect it with the story of the
Gordian knot.
Yeah.
And the thing is, just because we are so far away
from it,
we don't see the connections that the people who lived at the time immediately would know, because
everyone
they know all the stories.
Yeah. I mean, there's this great story. There's a great project which people did with Star Wars as well. And everybody got a 4-second clip or a 10-second clip that they had to recreate in their own thing.
Yeah.
Have you seen that one? Did I show you part of it and stuff like that? And there's different, every 10 seconds, there's a different style of filmmaking. There's a different, different actors. Everything is different. But you know what's going on, partly because you've seen Star Wars, but partly because if you see a hairy dog, that's Chewbacca, because of course it's Chewbacca. If you see someone with a dustbin on their head, that is R2-D2, and you
obviously,
don't, and you don't need to, like, it doesn't need to be the same. Anyway, it's one of those things that when you're so steeped in the cultural references of the day, any two stories with any connections that you have. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is that this one is very much, if you know the story of Jesus and the Sermon on the Mount, and directly after the Sermon on the Mount in the Bible, in one of the books, in Luke or Matthew, or whichever one it is, he then gets into a boat, and then there's the calming of the storm story, where he falls asleep in the boat.
Yeah.
And then, and I think in another gospel, the same gospel, there's another one where he walks on the water, when the boat is rough, and then he walks on the water.
Yeah.
And it's replaying these same themes. So at the end of this one, when Brother John gets into the boat, and I'm like, well, there's only one way this can end. Like, in my head, there's only one way this can end. Everyone's expecting the miracle. They're like, he's going to walk across the water. No, he's not going to walk across the water. He's going to get in the boat and calm the storm. And it ends differently. But the difference in how it ends is actually the real thing here, the real deal.
Like, okay.
That's the real meaning of this story, about the position of a latter-day prophet or a latter-day revolutionary leader.
I totally got
going
that
up against
he
Rome.
he was the one person. It always needs one person
yeah.
that all the other people...
A figurehead.
Yeah, a figurehead that every other person who actually wants to revolt as well can just attach themselves to.
Yeah.
And even if he didn't do a lot, people then in following him did the revolt.
Yes, it's laying the groundwork.
Yes,
you know,
it does.
It's laying the groundwork for things that happen, and you realize, oh, there is a lot of discontent against the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And this is the first time where it's like, oh, it's not just about this, it's not just about that, but the Inquisition is still a big deal. You know,
yes.
This is still a big thing.
And at the end of that one, is this already about the armies? Is that in that one?
Yeah, well, they gather together some armies,
yeah.
And in the end, it's not needed.
And, yeah. And the armies kind of just aren't, like, falling yeah. apart and yeah. stuff. Yeah.
Let's move on to the next story. Lords and ladies, a woman's bitter memories are evoked at the deathbed of a Aholia from the first story, who is her uncle. It says that it was very clear what's going on with this one. In a twist of fate, the guy from the first story asked the bar lady to marry her, Margaret.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it's Margaret. That's the Lady Margaret. Or she isn't Lady Margaret. She's the Margaret that the Lady Margaret steam truck is named after.
Right.
He doesn't marry her. Guess who marries her? His brother. His brother marries her instead. How did you not pick her on this? It's really clear. Strange is the uncle who says, and this woman goes off and she's been like, oh, I met this guy and he's got a car and cars are like an internal combustion engine car. And he's like, and he's a lord down in Corf Castle. And he's like, well, go on for it. Go to this party that you've been invited. You know, this whole, you know, wooing and stuff like that. And they say, oh, but there was some kind of fairy connection with these people meeting and things like that.
Okay.
So what this is, it's called Lords and Ladies, or is it Lords and Ladies or the next one, Lords and Ladies? Yeah, this is Lords and Ladies, about the niece of Jesse. So it's, what's her name? Not Eleanor. Eleanor's the next one, isn't it? But
yeah, Eleanor's the one in the white boat.
No, Eleanor. No? Eleanor is the door. It's in the next story, Corf Gate, with the siege and stuff like that. That's the daughter of this one.
Okay,
and it is another one of these things that she's another person who's kind of stuck out of time. No, out. What is it? Like, what's the one with Slaughterhouse 5 where he gets... he gets unstuck in time. So he starts experiencing life, like, out of order.
Oh,
like,
okay.
His memories are getting jumbled up in his head, and that's what's happening to her.
Okay.
She's, like, going, oh, well, this could have happened, and that could have happened. If I'd have made this decision then,
right.
I could have done that. And it plays out. But you only really know what happens at the end of that story in the next story, where it's sort of like... Eleanor Strange, and you're like, oh, this is another Strange.
Yeah,
well, not
yeah.
another Strange, but you know, you kind of understand what's going on there.
Okay.
It turns
out I totally didn't get this.
Her daughter her daughter, which was born out of wedlock of her, and then she died, the mother died, and then the lord of the castle went to get her, her, was it bastard daughter? What would you call it? Sort of out of wedlock daughter.
Yeah.
And then she's brought to the castle and he dies
without... And
the
mother dies in childbirth. Yeah.
And then he goes and gets her and brings back. And she unites the aristocracy and the business world and things like that. So
yes.
And lives in Corf Castle and has a run-in with the Catholic Church for different reasons, which is actually a weird, like, tax error, clerical error and stuff like that. Even says, oh, it was quite ironic this had all started off because people didn't, like, oh, you owe us all this corn. It's like, yeah, actually, Devon doesn't have any cornfields. It's more of a sheep kind of area.
Okay.
And, anyway, it all comes from a mistake. And there's a bit of an uprising, a bit of a siege at Corf Castle, Corf Gate. And I enjoyed that one. It is, again, a bit more straightforward, but it really does play into, you know, where the fairies come into it and it's influencing this and that. And then the coda, which is set a generation later with the son of... So it's the son... another fairy son. And it really plays into, like, what the themes of this are. So... Let me explain the whole story to you now.
Holy fuck. I had absolutely no clue.
What was going on here at the
what
end?
What was going on?
I think you just need to read it again. Okay.
Also, I think I just needed all this background knowledge. And you know, you just know England better. So you know, are there these fields and there this?
I know where
and
Dorset is.
Yeah, maybe I don't know exactly where Dorset is. But I know, like, Devon area.
Yeah,
like,
Devon.
It's the left bit on the left, bottom.
Down on
there,
that
yeah. I know all that, but you know so much more about all the themes of this that you just got all that immediately.
Let me explain, outside of the timeline of this book, what is going on.
Okay.
First of all, Sir John is kind of a Merlin figure who lives backwards in time.
backwards in time.
Well, he knows what's going to be happening in the future. They even have this conversation. She says, well, do I die? And he's like, everyone dies, you know?
Yeah.
But he knows what's happened. Like, the fairies understand. They have a way of seeing into the future. And I think there's some kind of, like, Merlin figure who lives backwards in time.
Yeah.
Mix that idea with many worlds interpretation of quantum physics, where different decisions lead to different splittings of history.
Okay.
And there's kind of stable history lines, but also unstable history lines.
Yeah.
Mix that with a bit of Man in the High Castle being able to cross over between the different lines.
Right.
And, you know, like some people, like, you know, the guy who has the little thing and he sits in a gate and suddenly he's in modern day, like our universe.
Yeah, yeah.
San Francisco. And he's like, what's that down there? Oh, it's like a big interstate thing that comes around. It's like, well, that doesn't exist. And then he goes back into the real. So there's some different crossing overs of stuff, like, or knowledge of what's happening in these different things. Okay.
Yes.
But it turns out that the fairies know that all these different timelines are ending in Holocaust and nuclear wars. It mentions the names of different concentration camps.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. Was
okay.
It Blessen and what was the other ones? Oh, it doesn't say here on the Wikipedia page, but it even says that, it says that, like, we keep discovering, like, in all these different timelines, we keep discovering nuclear power. First of all, nuclear fission.
Yeah.
Where we split the atoms, which is the little fairy symbol for the things going outwards.
Okay.
The arrows pointing outwards.
Yeah.
Is fission, splitting apart of atoms. And then we discover fusion, and
yeah,
that's the one
towards
the arrows pointing inwards.
Yeah.
Those are the two different things that we're trying to not in the nuclear holocaust. You remember this book was written in the 1960s. Nuclear holocaust was assumed that it was going to happen.
Yes.
Like so much science fiction.
Even still in the 80s.
Yeah, but it's so much science fiction from the 60s through to the 80s just assumes that everyone's going to die.
Yeah.
And it's like the Canticle for Leibowitz, which is, did you read the Canticle?
No, I didn't.
But that's another kind of fix-up novel, the short stories put together about looping time. And it's like, oh, and there's always a dark age, and next dark age is going to become from nuclear bombs and stuff like that.
It will be unavoidable to end in this kind of stuff.
And that's what annoys me about Canticle for Leibowitz, is that, oh, it shows, it's like, it's a book about how history is cyclical. And I'm like, no, history isn't cyclical. The fictional version of history in this book is cyclical.
Yeah.
But it isn't cyclical. But if you think that a dark ages will follow from a nuclear fallout.
Yeah.
And that it's going to be wrapped up in the Catholic Church and stuff like that, holding on to knowledge. So in the same way that in Canticle for Leibowitz, the Catholic Church accidentally hold on to knowledge, which doesn't help restart civilization, but it is a continuation of knowledge. The fairies understand that what we need is an agency. We need a way to, like I said at the beginning, we need a way to control technology. Not science, but we need a way to control technology and hold the world back until it is progressed enough and that it can understand what's going on with all these things to stop nuclear holocaust from happening. Because tell you something, that kills all the fairies as well as it kills all the humans.
Of course.
And the fairies are like, we need a way to stop these humans ending the world in a nuclear holocaust all the time.
Yes. Right, I see that.
And so they set into motion a way that the Catholic Church is going to control technological progress until the world is rational enough to be able to use technology.
So
until it's ready to use it.
Yeah.
Don't use internal combustion engines. Don't use electricity. Even though these things exist, don't use fusion. Don't use vision. We need to hold it back. So they take advantage of an event to steer history in different ways to put at least one timeline into a place where everybody doesn't die in a nuclear war at the end.
Okay, I see.
This timeline is that timeline.
Yeah.
The fairies are interacting. They even say, oh, Eleanor was born with the influence of the fairies. This person was helped out by the fairies. They're saying the Strange family, probably not a coincidence that the name is called Strange, but they are the ones who are being influenced by the fairies. They are the agents of the fairies.
Okay.
To channel people into position, which is going to help this. Now, this is really handy if you have somebody who's living backwards in time, a Merlin figure, and also know to be able to see into different timelines and different dimensions.
Yes.
So when there are interactions with the fairies are using the Catholic Church and the death and the assassination of Elizabeth I to keep Europe in a dark ages, but to kind of keep it in like a little holding pattern until technology has got to a point and everyone can kind of see what can happen with this technology
okay.
and get us into a better position. And then we can have a reformation. Then we can have a, you know, like an unburdening of everyone. And in a generation, everyone's like, oh, yeah, we're knocking down these castles. We're doing all of this. We're flying backwards and forwards here and stuff like that. And even at the end, it's actually saying, and this time we haven't had the Second World War. We okay. haven't had nuclear bombs. We haven't had the Holocaust. We haven't had concentration camps.
Okay.
It's been bad. We've seen the price that has been paid. But the Inquisition is just a price to be paid,
not having
nuclear wars.
Yes.
And not having okay. the, you know, the Holocaust of the Jews in Nazi
right.
Germany and all that yeah. kind of stuff. That's what the book is about. Now, I'm not sure if when it started off that was about. I think it started off as a fun adventure story in an alternative timeline with a guy in a truck.
Yes.
But by, I think, the end of the second story, you're like, oh, yeah, there's definitely fairies and they're influencing things here.
Right.
The signalers are like the place where...
It's like the connection.
Is a connection
yeah.
between the real world and the fairy world.
Okay.
And it's very clear because they're saying, actually, the signalers, they're sending all these signals, but really they're in with the fairies and they're doing, you know, the people high up know that there's this necromancy where they use these weird kind of like undead things to communicate over long distances by spirits and things
right.
like that. That's all in there. They are the signalers, it's very important that they're the agent of change. And when the signalers come and meet that guy, you know, the first signaler that we meet who dies and his soul is saved by the fairies,
yeah.
by Fairy Balder. One of the signalers turns up and one guy goes, what's all these symbols? And the other guy is like, I've got control of this, turn this down. They are the men in black. That guy is the men in black. He knows what's going on. He's
yeah.
one of the signalers. He turns up and is like, yep, I know these signals. This is for the higher
we
ups here.
We need to clean this up.
We need to clean this up.
Yeah.
Nobody is going to find out about this one. Look into this object, flash,
yeah, yeah.
and they lose the memory of the light.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's that guy's job.
Okay.
And when you realize, oh, this is a book. This is alternative timeline book, but it's actually a massive conspiracy by the elves to not let the humans destroy the world,
destroy themselves
and the fairies.
Yeah.
That's what
okay.
the book, that is what the book is about. I know that's very reductive to say it all, just to lay it out like that. But I think if you now read this book.
Yeah, I will see with totally different eyes. Yeah.
And I think because now people, like, if you've listened to this, you're going to be denied the exploration of this book. I have not read what other people think this book is about.
Yes.
But to me, it's very clear that, I mean, I say it's very clear to me what that book is about. That's the story that I think is very, very clear at the end when she's saying, oh, just remember all those back years ago. This is a thing that set this in motion. And it wouldn't have been possible without this thing that would happen before. And that wouldn't have been possible without this thing that before. And that wouldn't have been, you know, and it goes all the way back to this guy.
Yeah.
Who, it's sort of like, and if Margaret hadn't turned down great uncle Jesse all those years ago.
Right.
None of this would have been put in place. You know, none of this would have happened and things like that. So, yes. That's the thing. That's
yeah.
what the book is.
All right.
And I think
loads of people don't get this.
Maybe. I've not read anybody else's reviews.
I just scrolled down to see, and somebody said, beautifully written fantasy stories, which left me a bit cold. And I think lots of people, because you need to have this big insight in lots of different topics to then bring it together.
Yeah, that's why it was like
and
a perfect
see all
book
the parallels. Exactly.
But the thing is, I thought it was a little bit heavy-handed by bringing this all together at the end. When Eleanor is like doing this monologue, she's like, oh, it's like a pavane. It's a dance in six parts. And they all repeat each other and they all feed into each other.
Yeah.
And there's a coda. And it's like, this wouldn't have happened if this hadn't happened beforehand. I was like, I've got all of that. Like, I was already like, I'm already there. Don't just explain this
yeah.
to me. Like,
but you're like the 1%, I think.
Of being able to pick up on shit like this.
Yes, and to see all the parallels. I didn't see that.
But for me, it was really clear that that's what the book was about.
But I think it's also down to me just listening to it as an audiobook in split ways
yeah.
that were not meant to be split up than the way I did split them up.
That is true, probably.
And I think if you read it, first of all, you see the titles. You understand that it's the six things,
the six measures, they're called.
The six measures, which is a measure in music, is actually a thing. So that you get more the things, you can see them, and then they get more together as one
yeah.
construction.
Yeah. For me, like I say, it started off and it was a fun adventure story. And there's like, oh, a fairy mentioned there and stuff like that. Oh, so it's probably fantasy. Yeah, but it's kind of fantasy based in like this splitting timelines, quantum stuff, you know, I don't know, it hit me in the same way, not to the same extent, but it hit me in the same way that The Man in the High Castle did. And some of these other books where I'm just like, oh, this is actually really clever. But I think Man in the High Castle is kind of like, it's more clever and it's sort of like so much more symbolic on the face of it. This is, like I say, it's a bit more dense. It's a bit more opaque.
It's a bit more hidden.
It's like, I think it's kind of fun that the audiobook cover is this person in a pane glass window.
It's a mosaic kind of thing.
And like another Philip K. Dick book, which is like A Scanner Darkly, which is sort of like, yeah, you see in a mirror. Like, you see yourself in a mirror darkly, you know.
Yeah.
It's sort of like you're seeing a reflection, but you're seeing it through a glass pane. It's sort of like there's light. This is the thing about a pane of glass, like a glass window, like a stained glass window, is that you're looking at a picture, which is only, it only makes, you can only really see it with
when
the light
is
the light is shining through. But you're not seeing the light behind. You're not seeing what's out the window.
Right.
You're seeing this facade in front of what the window is. Like, we're looking out the window now and we can see our garden.
Right. We can see straight out.
We can see straight through.
Yes.
But if there's a stained glass window in the way,
you can only see the picture that you meant to see. Yeah.
And even if there's a picture of a garden on the stained glass window, we're still not seeing that. So I'm saying it's like this piece together thing.
Hmm.
And so I think that the book cover is actually really good.
This is really clever. I looked at the others.
Some of the other edition books.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a bit bad, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this book really spoke to me. I thought it was very clever. But again, maybe it was just that one of those perfect storms of like, oh, this book is just for me, man. This is really great.
Yeah, it's totally the book for you.
Yes, it wasn't a book for you. But I think it could be.
It could be now.
But the thing is, now I've explained it to you. Yeah, would it be a bit obvious when you read
it? No, it wouldn't.
Okay.
I think I will give it a second go and I might read it as a proper book.
Yeah. But also, don't redo it straight away.
No. Like,
wait
until
next year or something, and we'll get an update of what you thought about this book.
Yeah, that's good.
So, anything else?
I'm really happy that you enjoyed it so much.
I really did enjoy it. Again, there were some points where I was like, the bit with the boat, the third measure with Rebecca and the white boat. I was like, yeah, well, whatever. I mean, it was good thematically, and it was a fun adventure story, but it didn't really add that much to it. And it even says here, I just noticed here on the Wikipedia page, it says that the white boat is not in all the editions of the book, so that's not even in some of the versions of this book.
Yeah.
But it kind of makes sense that it is in it, because otherwise it wouldn't have been a Pervain. Let's have a look at Wikipedia for Pervain. What's his name after? A Pervain, different ways of spelling it.
Yeah.
Is a slow processional dance common in Europe during the 16th century.
Yes, it is. And in German, it's called Pavane. So it's a Pavane.
Yeah.
It's definitely the way I would say it.
So it says generally follows the form AABBCC.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's what we're getting here is an AABBCC.
Okay.
So different things, the first two stories are the setting up the technology of the world.
Right.
The next two, the white boat and the brother John, are both connected by the fishes, the sea and the thing, and then last two, the ladies and lords and the Corfe Gate, are both the aristocracy and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then, so there we go. We've learned something there.
Cool.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for pointing this all out to me. I know this is more of a spoiler episode because...
Well, it was an in-depth discussion. Like, I
really enjoyed it, so people should not... we should put that in the
beginning. But the point is... say at the beginning. Edit. Yeah. This is spoiler-tastic.
Totally. Read it first if you want to have it non...
No, but the point is sometimes, again with Slaughterhouse-5, people go reading, it makes sense. And then people have actually said to me about my episodes, like, oh, I'm really glad, even though I'd read the book, I'm really glad that you went into a lot of details to actually explain what was happening in that, because now it's really clear to me what was happening in that book.
Okay.
Because it is a crazy book and it's all over the place and there's different timelines and different, and he gets unstuck in time. He lives part of his life backwards and has memories going, you know, he lives in reverse, and there is some stuff which is fantasy stuff and it's only happening in his head, and there's other stuff with aliens and he goes to another planet and stuff, and it's like, well, is that real or is that happening in his head? It's like, you know, and if you read the book like I did, and for me, it was kind of clear what was going on. Like, there's only one... For me, there's only one reading which makes the story make sense.
Right.
If if there is another reading, you go, oh no, all of that literally happened was literally true. It's just like, yeah, but then
like
the story is
the Bible.
Well, people
read the Bible and take things like
literally true.
Literally true. You have to cut off somebody's fingers to whatever.
Yeah, yeah. You have to cut the baby in half. Yeah.
But the whole thing about it is if you actually do know about it really well and you study it.
Well, I think the Bible is there's so much baggage that comes with the Bible. That's why I wanted to use the Slaughterhouse-Five, because that is a book about being unstuck in time,
right,
and about mixing in fantasy and science fiction tropes and all this different kind of things. But okay, this is the other thing. Okay, when you read the book The Life of Pi,
right? It's the same.
You can just read that as a story that actually happens. But yes, it's very clear that story doesn't happen. There was no tiger in the boat.
No,
and there was no evidence that there was any tiger in the boat. And then the movie made it, I think, even more clear.
Yes,
to say it's like, yeah, actually, the orangutan was this guy, and this guy was the French chef.
Yes.
And he was the tiger. Like, yes, that was the only way he could get through it, but it was by becoming the tiger. And right, he had to kill these other guys. You know, he had to kill these, the things that happened in the book. If you read the book, that was him. And the other animals were the different people that were sharing in the boat.
Yes.
The tiger survived. And that's the only way that he can reconcile it in his brain.
Yeah.
That's the book about it. And people go, but then he turns up to an island and there's all these cats on this island floating on. He's like, yeah, it didn't happen. It's a fantasy.
But this is totally... I also recently read all these stories about humans of New York. I follow this on Facebook. And there is this... he just had the conversations with traumatized military people.
Yeah.
And they all have PTSD.
Of course they do.
And the thing is, these kind of fantasies in your head help you to stay sane, because they separate you out from the things happening, and it's not literally for you. It's not, you can say, okay, this wasn't me, this was this and this and this.
Yeah.
And then you can say, okay, I wasn't involved, the greater thing was involved.
Yeah.
And it gives you some distance. And I think this is also part, like, this is that like is the treatment, the psychological treatment of PTSD. Yeah.
Well, that is literally what Life of Pi is about. And really, that is literally what Slaughterhouse-Five is about.
Right.
Like, it's about someone who survived the bombing of Dresden in an underground slaughterhouse and came out, and the whole of Dresden was completely fucked. And it's just like, well, you don't go away from that unscathed.
No.
And you have to tell yourself stories to explain why you survived and other people didn't survive.
Right.
That's what that book is about.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that it is still happening. Humans are like that.
Yes,
and
of course.
You have to find ways to stay sane when horrible things happening around you.
Yeah.
And having these fantasies and putting it into distance helps you.
We're getting onto, we're now reviewing like three other books which aren't this book. That's not what this book is about. But there is one way to read this book, which is obviously what the author intended, or that's the way the author tied all of these stories together to make them into a whole book. But it's there at the beginning. You know, those ideas are there in these earlier books. Now, I'm not quite sure how much of that, he had these different stories, he decided to collect them together, and then maybe when they were published as a novel, he like inserted other bits and changed a few bits and edited a bit.
Added the coda.
Yeah, did some of the, you know, what's it, retrofitting. No, what's the term when they...
retrofitting.
No, there's actually a term which is where you just... Oh, retcon. You're retroactively... just changing the continuity.
Right.
So
okay,
this thing didn't really happen, but now we're going to say it did happen, and then that's the way it obviously happens. You know, you just go in there and say, Han didn't shoot first.
Okay.
You know.
Yes.
Yeah, but Han did shoot first. In fact, he didn't shoot first. He just shot. Like, he shot without any, you know, that's the thing. But you can go back in and go, oh, well, let's mix this bit about. And it's like, no, Han shot first. That's why that's a big thing.
Yes.
And I'm not sure if when this book was put together into a novel, some distinct things were changed to kind of tie, like, in
but
some
did,
words.
Did it
changed.
Get put together when the guy was still alive?
Yeah, no, it was.
Okay.
It says here, it was there was originally, oh, where is it? Publication. Anyway, it was originally published in a science fiction magazine or something. I can't see it. It must have been on a different oh yeah, no, because I looked at that io9 one. Okay, let's read up here as well. So it was it's a fix-up novel,
and I really quite like it that you because sometimes in stories and in the podcast we get all, like, quite from a general point of view.
Yeah.
And in this one, we got in
very specific,
in depth. And I think this is very nice to show how much you can read into books and how much you how well you understand books. And
I will go through now my notes that I made about this.
Okay.
Fairies turn up to take the soul of a dying man, Boulder is Jesus. That was my first one. Artist of the Inquisition. Sermon on the Mount is my note there. The next one, Fifth Measure. The Strange Family is moving up, because they was talking about Strange, and I was like, yeah. Oh, these guys are doing better for themselves than they were in the first story. More Boulder and Jesus references in that one. Corfe Gate, Badass Cannon Blaster, and Lady Margaret Cradle to Grave. So we follow the story. Like in the first story, we get the start, the Lady Margaret, which is the steam wagon at the start.
Right.
We hear about it being... brought into light. It was christened, and he was like, call it Lady Margaret, and he's like, yeah. Okay, like that, and he does. And then in the last story at Corfe Gate, there's a the Lady Margaret is destroyed again at the very end.
Okay,
so there's kind of like a, we follow Lady yeah. Margaret all the way from one side to the other side there. And
I think that this book is full with these kind of little
yeah things. And those are only my notes, but Eleanor is the daughter of Margaret Strange from the previous book. I made that note there. And otherwise, I was just sort of like saying third measure, white boat. You know, I was just writing the titles just right. So I had it clear. But of course,
yeah.
I could have just looked that up on the Wikipedia page, which I did.
Of course.
So that's it. So,
well, thank you so much for clarification here.
Did you enjoy the book later after the clarifications than you did reading it? Or do you think, like I say, you're just going to have to read it again?
I have to read it again because okay. It was all so tumbled in my head. So it was like put stuff in the tumble dryer and mix it up.
Okay.
And this is why I came out in
so,
my head.
So I don't think you should give it a rating. Or do you want to give it? I think
did
it's a
I
bit weird.
Did I give it a rating?
I'm not sure, but it's not a fair rating.
No, I didn't give it. Oh, okay. I didn't give it a rating. I just gave it a little review on Goodreads.
Okay. I'm going to rate this book 4.5 stars because I think it is very well done. And yeah. I really enjoyed
and
it.
And you enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it. And I'm just like, why don't... Like, it's on the Golan's Masterworks. It's generally... It's like a top 100 science fiction fantasy story of all time. And I'm like, why don't I just read these things? But I it's always there. Like, oh, do a list. But these are... The Masterworks series, I think, is a good indication of real quality. Like, if it's on that Golan's Masterwork, if it's been reprinted with a forward by someone else... Yeah, it's going to be a good one. Or at least it's going to be a historically interesting one.
Right.
Excuse me.
Isn't it?
So I think that's about it. What else do we have to say? Oh, also, it's quite cool, after finishing this book, and I finished it on this trip to Iceland. And in Iceland, it's all like, oh yeah, people really do believe in elves and fairies. And
yeah, they do.
And there is actually that street called Baldur's Gate. And I was like, oh, Baldur's Gate, that's a funny video game reference, and also Baldur. And there's lots of other things.
Lots of fairies.
There.
And there's a person who's... Her job is fairy affairs, and she gets brought into building sites and have to check it if it's okay.
Yeah, in case it's going to disturb
the fairies.
And if it's not
okay, they just did that. They just had a rock.
They were building a road, weren't they?
Yeah, and they just dug out that rock again, cleaned it, and put it back into place because it's an elf's rock.
Yeah.
And there were little accidents happening, and everyone thought, oh no, we did something wrong.
So it was funny to read this book about elves controlling human history and then going, that's cool. Right. Oh no, fairies, not elves. Right. You can email me, luke@juggler.net, if you've got a direct question. You can also chat with us both on the on goodreads.com. Go to the Goodreads SFBRP listener group and recommend books, because that's why we read this book.
This is why we got this, yeah.
And that's good as well. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurge on Twitter, and you can follow me also on Instagram. I've been posting some fun things on Instagram from our 8-day trip traveling around Iceland in a 4x4 camper van, which was a lot of fun. So check that out. Also on my blog, lukeburridge.com/blog. And also go to sfbrp.com and click on episode list, and you can see all of the books that I have reviewed in the past, and Juliana has reviewed with me in the past. And and you can see what I've rated all the books and all of them. So if you're going to send me a recommendation,
check this first.
Or lots of people say, have you read this? And I'm like, it's right there in the archives. And also there's, I think in the... On the iTunes feed or the feed of podcast, it only goes back like 100 episodes or whatever it is. So that's the way to get the previous episodes.
There you get the full list.
Yeah, you get a full list and things. So it's much,
we also have an upcoming another podcast.
Yes, we're going to be on the Reading Envy podcast as well, but I'm not sure when that's going to be put out.
No, but it will be fun.
We're going to talk about a few books on there.
Right.
One of them that we listened to together, which will fit in well with Jenny and her job and background on Reading Envy.
Yeah.
And I think that's everything.
That's it.
Anything else to say?
No.
Oh, well, let's do it. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.